Hey, harlots.
I'm Jen.
I'm Liz.
And we're Harmless Harlots.
Relationship geeks.
Ethical sluts.
We love exploring how to have more authentic relationships.
Whether it's with yourself, someone else, multiple others, or even the earth.
We are enthusiasts, not experts. So if you'd like to explore along with us, we give you our enthusiastic consent to come along.
Do you have anything you wanted to address, or we could go back to book? Though I'm a little confused as to where we are, because we did a lot of jumping around.
I have also not read anything in the book for the last week, because I've been apartment hunting, so I haven't had a lot of time.
So I'm on page 107, and this part is back in talking about kind of why people identify as poly, which we've talked about a little bit, and so I guess this might be redundant, but like I just have marked, when I ask my own clients why they're CNM, they declare they seek to have greater need fulfillment, want greater expression of themselves, interested in the personal growth and development, give and receive additional love and support, and then also sexual diversity, philosophical views, and because CNM is a more authentic expression of who they are. And so, yeah, I think I definitely resonated a lot with like the growth and development, because as I've kind of said, like, I think when you kind of, I don't know, when you isolate yourself too much with just one person, I think that you can become a certain person with them, and having more and different and varied people in your life can like help to make sure that you're always like growing and developing and not kind of in a rut.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. In the one monogamous adult relationship that I really had, we definitely did kind of isolate ourselves in an island. Like, I remember when we were dating, every day after work, I would come home briefly sometimes, but then I would, you know, go over to his apartment and spend the entire day with him and then sleep at his place and wake up in the morning and go to work. So I spent the vast majority of my time just like being with him. And that, I mean, it was lovely. I was very happy. We had a great time doing that. But, you know, I don't think I was challenging myself and exploring and growing in any way when we were kind of in that place. And it was happy. Like, it was a good time. I don't regret it. I had fun. But yeah, there wasn't a lot of exploration and growth and development. And we didn't even really go on dates after the first, like, month or so. Like, we would just stay home and hang out, because we were just comfortable, and being comfortable is really nice.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm definitely not advocating for like constantly switching out partners, but just like the, like being very intensely merged with one person to kind of the detriment of having good relationships with a lot of other people. Like, I guess if it works for you, fine. I guess for me personally, I like the appeal of, you know, just having multiple of those to always keep myself in check, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and it, I don't know, like it worked for me when I was doing it, but when I reflected on that relationship after it ended, that was one of my big regrets, was I was like, I feel like I just spent, you know, half a year with this man, and I was very happy. Like, it was a very happy half a year, but I was like, I feel like I just spent half a year not really challenging myself in any new ways. Like, I just did one thing for half a year. And I kind of decided after that, I was like, I don't want to get stuck in a rut like that again, even though it was happy and I enjoyed it. Yeah. Like, even though I think if I did it again, I would be happy. You know, if you find the right person, it's very comfortable. It's very nice. But upon reflecting, I was like, I don't think that's a thing that is necessarily good for me, or something I want at a higher level. You know, like in the moment, it was something I wanted. I was happy doing it. But like in reflecting, I'm like, I don't think that's what I want for my life.
Yeah. And I mean, I might be a little bit of a hypocrite, though not too much, because my only very serious relationship has been during quarantine, and so I pretty much have only seen my partner, was pretty much only seeing my partner for like an extended period of time, and I was also very happy, but you know, there was also not really any other options. So I
right, yeah, that's kind of a confounding factor.
So yeah, but the next quote says, "We intuitively know that telling our friends, parents, or colleagues that we are in it for the love will probably fare better than telling them that we are in it for the sex," which I think, you know, obviously just speaks to the very weird sex negative culture we have, because it's like, I mean, it's, I feel like it's perfectly normal and healthy to like want multiple and different sexual partners, and to, you know, and for it to be different people who like fulfill your emotional versus like your sexual needs. Like, it just seems like, what are the odds that you will find somebody who like rocks your world sexually and also connects with you very deeply on an emotional level? And like, if you have different people who fulfill different needs, like, what's the matter with that? I don't know.
Yeah, I also think, in my experience, I've known a lot of people who have trouble separating sex from romantic attraction, like sexual attraction versus romantic attraction, which, I mean, even definitionally, we've both struggled with kind of defining the difference between those things. But I've had several people with whom I have had a sexual relationship, and then they have subsequently wanted to end the sexual relationship because there were no romantic feelings. And I was like, we don't need romantic feelings to have sex. And that blew their minds. They were like, what? We can have sex even if we're not like falling in love? And I was like, I mean, I can. I don't, like, if you don't want to, we obviously don't have to, but I'm very capable of having sex without, you know, it being a relationship. But I think people are just socialized to expect, you know, if you're having sex with someone, it should be because it's going somewhere and you're like, you know, doing something romantic and what have you. And I'm like, we can just have sex because it's fun. Like, it feels good and it's a good time.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to be, you know, necessarily building a romantic relationship. There doesn't have to be, at least for me. I think everybody's different. And for some people, that's just not the lifestyle they want. But I think for some people, it's also just because that's what they've been taught.
Yeah. And I definitely don't have any direct experience with that. I philosophically agree with you with like, yeah, sex and emotions, you can definitely separate them. Whether or not I know if I'm capable of that at this moment, I don't know. But I think that's reason.
I don't think necessarily everybody is capable of it. Like, I definitely am, and I've known many people who were, and I think a lot more people are than they think they are, because I think a lot of people are socialized to think they can't when maybe they can. But again, I do think some people probably, that is just the way they are. Like, their sexuality is, they only want to have sex if it's part of a romantic interaction. And that's fine. But I think a lot of people just think that's the way they are because they've been told that's the way it should be.
Yeah, and I think that's possibly a reason why, at least in my experience, the like BDSM and polyamory communities are, I don't know, I see a lot of overlap in them in my experience. And I think that is because the BDSM community is kind of the experts in like seeing sex as an activity, like especially in like what I've read about, you know, like sub and dom relationships. It's like, maybe you have a dom and like maybe that person is nothing to you but your dom and you have no emotional connection to them, but it's like you have a very good physical chemistry and you agree on kind of like, you know, boundaries. And so like that is that specific kind of relationship. And it is very just like, you know, sex is a thing we do. It's an activity that we enjoy to do together. So yeah, I think that's another reason why those communities seem to be very intertwined. Oh, like some people choose CNM because they connect, arises from their reading or inquiries into the history of monogamy and its connection with patriarchal control over women's sexuality, which I guess ties into kind of, we were talking about weddings last time. So some people are CNM just to fuck the patriarchy, which I completely respect.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, in my life, one of my big things is just questioning everything. And monogamy is a big one that a lot of people just never question.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think reading Sex at Dawn was just so illuminating for me, of just like the advent of agriculture, like inventing capitalism, inventing monogamy, inventing sexism. And it's like, wow, like
I think a lot of things people think were just these naturally occurring things that have been going on forever were like very consciously constructed. And like they were constructed before we were born. So it feels like that's just the way things always were and it's the natural stuff. But like, no, they were very intentional, targeted constructs, like meant to format society in a certain way.
I mean, it's, I don't know, it's hard to throw around the words natural and intentional because it's like, what is natural? I mean, was agriculture agriculture like invented about 10,000 years ago, which is not the majority of our evolutionary history? Yes. But I guess also like, I don't know, it's hard for me to say that like these were intentionally constructed. Like they were things that evolved out of the new situation we found ourselves in. And so, I mean, as you're saying, like they are not the one and only and the best way to do things. But I mean, it's not like a committee of men sat down and are like, all right, how are we going to fuck everything up now?
I mean, in essence, it's not what happened.
I suppose. Oh, here's one that I'm sure you will resonated with you, which was, there is no one right way to practice CNM, and it is more of a create your own relationship than a one size fits all approach.
Uh-huh.
So that goes back to your kind of relationship anarchy.
Yes. I really think I resonate more with relationship anarchy than polyamory. Cause like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I definitely, at least right now, I'm happier having multiple sexual partners versus having just one. But you know, there have been times in my life where I've only had one sexual partner and I've been perfectly content. So I think the bigger thing for me is just, you know, I don't want whoever I'm sleeping with to dictate who I'm prioritizing.
And they have, I just love the chart that they have on page 110 because it's like an X and Y axis. And on the X axis, they have emotional exclusivity. And on the Y axis, they have sexual exclusivity.
Oh, yeah. What page is that?
110. And so high on exclusivity on both dimensions is monogamy, and then low on exclusivity on both dimensions is relationship anarchy.
Okay, actually, this is a funny thing. So I've been apartment hunting for the last week, right, for our apartment. And when I was looking at floor plans, one of the big things that would always annoy me, one of the biggest things that would always annoy me is a lot of the floor plans would have really unnecessary walls. Like, it would be like, why is this wall there? You could break that down and the space would feel so much bigger. There's no reason for this wall. And I was talking to a friend of mine last night because he's also moving. And so we were looking at apartments together, and a bunch of the floor plans, I was just like, these walls are dumb. Like, we could get rid of all these walls. And he was like, that's kind of how you are like in life too. And I was like, yeah, I am. Like, look at all these walls and boundaries. Let's get rid of those. We don't need those. That's unnecessary. These walls are not needed. If we didn't have these walls, it'd be better.
That's fair. I know, not to break your beautiful metaphor, and I know nothing about architecture. The only thing that comes to mind is like, there's such a thing as like load-bearing walls, and sometimes you just
have
to put a wall somewhere so things don't fall down, which I don't know if you want to try to extend the metaphor into that, but...
Setting boundaries is important, and I need to get better at it, but also...
It's more of like, the metaphor is like societal boundaries of like, you know, you can only have one partner.
And ooh,
like,
we're holding up the systems of oppression and we need to break down. When we find the load bearing walls and break them down, the system will crumble and we can rebuild and make it better. There's the metaphor. I found
sure.
it.
Sure.
You're welcome.
Sure. Yeah. I think I want to. They have open relationships near to hierarchical polyamory. And this is, I guess, I don't know. I don't want to shame, obviously, this is a very safe space, and I'm probably speaking from a space of ignorance because I don't know and I've not practiced this style as much. But, like, open relationships is just something that I've read about it and I still don't quite comprehend what it is. And it's the closest thing that there is to swinging, so it's very near to that. So maybe just let me turn to the page. And okay, so swinging is couples engaging So, like, swinging, it talked about, like, couples, but I guess you could have one person in a relationship who's swinging, but maybe that just makes an open relationship. I don't know. So, swinging is when couples will, like, have sex with other people, other couples, individuals, or groups. The focus is primarily sexual rather than romantic. Often prefer to keep emotional involvement to a minimum in order to maintain the emotional primacy of their marriage or primary relationship. So swinging is like, we can have sex with other people, but like we're emotionally monogamous is what it sounds like. So then open relationship is when one or both partners have sexual romantic relationships outside of their partnership. Open relationships tend to be more focused on having sex and limiting the degree of emotional involvement with others in order to keep the primary dyadic relationship as their first priority.
Dyadic.
So, yeah. I mean, they sound similar to me. And I don't know. I suppose the thing that has always... Okay, I think my struggle is, like, it sounds like when they talk about, you know, we want to keep the emotional primacy of, like, you know, the one relationship. To me, that sounds like kind of forced and like imposing that boundary. But I suppose if there are people who truly identify as that way of like, I really only have feelings for one person, but I want to have sex with a lot of other people, then like, I suppose that's fine. And I imagine there can be people who identify that way. I think it just depends on if somebody is in that relationship because they do identify that way or because they are kind of imposing it is kind of why I think I've always struggled to kind of understand what people would be interested in that. And I think I remember reading, and again, this is not fully based, so, you know, if there are people in open relationships out there, I'm sorry if I'm misrepresenting you. I think I remember reading something in my relationship class last semester that was talking, we did a reading about like CNM, and they did talk about open relationships. And I think they said that based on that research was like, how reliable is it that like open relationships / marriages did have slightly lower satisfaction levels than like people who identified as poly. But again, I don't know if that's, really? You know, self-sorting or, you know, like, cause it's not like an experiment. You're not assigning people to a relationship style. So research on that is kind of interesting. Maybe I'll just, cause again, I read these definitions and they sound very similar to me. I don't know about you, but maybe, I will do some more research into that because this is kind of what started with aromanticism when I found it. I was like, I don't think that's a real thing. And I was like, oh, that's because it is me.
I am the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they talk about hierarchical polyamory, which this is another thing that I've never really understood. And I guess if there are people who practice it and it really works for them, like, good for you. But I think on the pages I've been on that most people are kind of like, yeah, hierarchical polyamory, we don't really vibe with that. But the quote I've marked is, many polyamory experts caution against hierarchical, I just hate that word. I don't like the style and I don't like the word. Hierarchical relationship structures. Words are a struggle today, Liz. That create asymmetrical balances of power in which people in secondary or tertiary positions have little or no say about how the relationships unfold or are subject to vetoes or rules from their metamors. So yeah, like whenever rules get involved, I don't know. Like I get that sometimes you need rules, but that's just the part that like makes me very iffy because it's just like trying to impose your will on other people when it's like that's just, as we mentioned, control is an illusion is a control. Like you can't really control other people, and so people who like try to do that, it's like red flag.
Yeah I don't know. I am a firm believer that anything can be done well or poorly, you know, like there's good and bad aspects to everything. Like the internet, a lot of good stuff, keeps people connected, but also human trafficking, you know, everything just exists and we can use it for good things or use it for bad things. I think styles of polyamory, it goes the same way where, you know, any style of polyamory, if you do it with like fully informed, enthusiastic consent, open, honest communication, everybody's into it, everybody has perfect information, they know what's going on, they're happy with what's going on, like you can do it well. But there are some styles that are easier to fuck up than others, for sure. And I think hierarchical polyamory is one that is easier to fuck up because, I don't know, hierarchies are difficult to manage without having hurt feelings. But I think it can be done. I mean, I think you definitely can do hierarchical polyamory in a way that makes everybody happy and everybody's needs are met and they're all fulfilled. But it is one of the easier styles to do poorly, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess I turn to the next page and I did mark another quote that says, "Descriptive hierarchy is less about a given relationship prescription for the future. The term describes a hierarchy that might include several primaries that have emerged more organically and have become more domestically, financially, or emotionally entangled than other relationships, but there's still an openness to things changing or new people entering the hierarchy." So I think this is kind of what we've talked about before with like a very imposed and rigid hierarchy, like I think I kind of avoid, but at the same time, like, there will be people who you care more about just because you have more of a connection with them or you have more of a history with them. And so, like, if you want to use the term primary, like, sure, you will have people who are maybe more important to you just because, like, you know, the person who you've been in a relationship with for 15 years might have a little more weight than the person who you just met yesterday. But what they said, like, descriptive hierarchy of it being much more organic, I think that is kind of what you were talking about, of how it, like, it can be done in a more ethical way, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I could see situations where it would work really well for a group of people, but I can also see a lot of situations where it wouldn't work really well and people just do it out of laziness and convenience and selfishness and... Yeah, I mean, yeah. All of this, if you do it out of just laziness and selfishness, of course it's going to not work. But if you do it out of a place of wanting to be intentional and designing your own relationships to be what's best for you and your people, then they're going to be better.
Yeah, and I think you are right where, like, maybe I'm speaking too broadly, but, like, it's, like, the rules that I think are toxic are, like, you know, if there's a couple in a relationship, and then, like, one partner says to the other, like, you can only date a certain gender. It's like, okay, why? And, like, see, just things are where it's like, but what if you have a really strong connection with somebody of that specific gender? Like, why would you just kill that? Like, what is the reason? And I suppose, as we just said, like, no relationship style is one size fits all. So everything is very context dependent. I guess yeah. I don't know.
Well, and I think it's also important to continue checking in with people because what works right now may not work tomorrow. So, like, if you have a situation where both partners are comfortable with one of the partners hooking up only with people of a certain gender, maybe that'll work for a while. But then, yeah, if they meet somebody of a different gender that they're like, hey, I want to do this, then you just go check in and you're like, hey, I know this is a rule we had set, but I think it would work better for me if we changed it. Are you open to that? And then you have that conversation.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I just, and you know, these are all terms, as we've discussed in length, language is a blunt tool for communicating the abstract electrical thoughts in our heads and making them into other electrical thoughts in other people's heads. But the quote I marked in what they call non-hierarchical polyamory, which is just polyamory as we usually use it. It says, each relationship is allowed to grow into what it naturally wants to be. And so I think that's just why I prefer the thing that we term non-hierarchical polyamory more, because the thing that I like about polyamory is just that, like, it is, like, natural and not forced, whereas with, like, monogamy, like, the monogonormative society we live in, it's like, you have to be with one person who has to fulfill all of your needs, and you cannot do anything else. Whereas this, it's like, if you have a connection with someone, you can explore it. And then right. Once you have all the connections that satisfy your needs, then you can stop. And it's like, yes, why wouldn't we just do that? Why do we enforce all of these stupid, why do we have all these walls? Why don't we break down these walls?
There you go. That's what I'm saying. Why do we need these walls? There's no reason for this wall to be there. One of the floor plans we were looking at, even our brother Billy was looking at this floor plan with me, and we were comparing these two different two-bedroom apartments, and the one that was bigger we looked at it and we're like, this looks smaller. Why does it look smaller? And we were like, because these walls don't need to be there. There was a hallway in there that even Billy was like, what the fuck? Why is that wall there? Just get rid of that wall. There is no reason for that wall to be there. But maybe it was load-bearing. I don't know. But it was a dumb wall.
Yeah. And then the next part type they talk about is solo polyamory, which I just marked emphasizing autonomy and the notion of being your own primary partner and prioritizing your relationship with yourself first and foremost.
Yeah, I need to get better at that.
And then relationship anarchy. Relationship anarchists seek to dismantle the social hierarchy. I need to look up a synonym for hierarchy. Hierarchy. It just sounds like you're like chewing on your tongue. Like dismantle social hierarchies dictating how sexual and romantic relationships are prioritized over all other forms of love. Blah, 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 blah. And so people who identify as relationship anarchists make less distinction between the importance or value of their lovers over their friends or other people in their life, and they do not only reserve intimacy or romance for the people they have sex with.
Yes. So,
yes. Yes. All those things.
Yes. All of that.
And then a new term that I learned that they mentioned was polyintimates. Polyintimates might be non-sexual partners who live together, travel together, raise children together, or share other aspects of life where the level of investment involvement does not fit the conventional notion of friendship. So this is what we talked about, I think, a while ago with, like, soul friends and, like, people who it's like, this is my friend and this person is a huge priority in my life over my romantic relationships. Like, you will always come second, which I guess sounds kind of hierarchical, but but like the notion of like, yeah, like this is somebody who is incredibly dear to me and like I want to share a lot of my life with them, and maybe we're just not what you traditionally call romantic. And so it's always hard for me. Like, I went to the mall the other day and I saw this person ordering food. And, like, the cashier and the person were both, like, young women. And, like, I was like, oh, they look kind of flirtatious. And I was like, but do I really want this to be a lesbian relationship? Or do I really want this to be, like, you know, the forever friends kind of thing? Like, there's just so many things to ship. Which, again, goes back to the thing where it's like, you don't need to know about other people's relationships. That's none of your business. And it's like, yeah, I get that. I just really want all the queer relationships and I want to know all about them.
I've definitely found in my life that the platonic relationships I've had have often stood the test of time more than the romantic sexual. Although, I mean, not all of them. Like, there are definitely also sexual relationships that have lasted longer. Like, my longest one, who is coming back to the States in a month, and I'm very excited for that. My longest one, we've been having sex since, well, we have been, I was physically intimate with him when I was in high school. We weren't having sex because I was a young late bloomer, but we have been physically intimate since our junior year of high school. So that's, oh good golly, would have been 2015. It's now 2021. So, no, sorry, even earlier. No, I'm thinking college. Sorry, high school. I graduated in 2013, so it would have been 2011. Yeah, so 10 years, a decade. And he is one of my longest standing friendships, and we have the sexy sex on occasion. Just a lot of my other friends that have also been friends for 10 years or more, we have never had sex, and they're near and dear to my heart as well. So anyway, my point is you can have super deep, intimate relationships with or without sex. Mm-hmm. The end.
Yes. I was just very tangentially, just you mentioning the passage of time. I was talking with someone and they were like, oh, I need to get a tetanus shot. And I was like, oh yeah, like I think you need to get those every 10 years. But like I just had mine. And then I was like, wait, I think that was like sixth grade when I got mine, like when we moved. And it has been like a decade. And I was like, shoot, darn the passage of time.
Yeah, honestly, time fucking flies.
And then the last category they mention is polyamorous and asexual, because obviously you can be polyamorous and asexual. So they just wanted to, you know, note that like you can have multiple people who you are, you know, in love with or romantically connect with, but you know, maybe you just don't have sex with anyone because that's not your jam. So that is valid and cool and good for you as long as you're doing it ethically.
Good for you. You look happy and healthy. I love the TikTok audio that's just good for you, but they took out all the toxic parts. So yeah. It's just good for you. You look happy and healthy. Good for yeah. you. You're doing great out there without me.
Yeah, yeah. How is TikTok? I haven't. It's been a while since I've been there.
Well, I was off it for a while because the Wi-Fi in the hotel where we were staying when we were apartment hunting was shite. So I did not watch any TikToks, and I got back and I had like 20,000 TikToks to watch from people. It's fine. It's a platform. I watch stuff on it. Actually, on the note of Olivia Rodrigo, I, out of sheer boredom today, well, not even boredom. I have so much stuff to do. It wasn't boredom. It was like, I don't want to do anything else. Yeah. And sometimes... Yeah, you know this because you watch fucking The Bachelor and Love Island and all that. But like sometimes when you're really stressed, you just need some garbage TV. Yeah. So I started watching High School Musical, the musical, the series.
No!
I don't hate it. I recognize that it is trash, but I am entertained.
I couldn't even find it entertaining. It was just so... tacky. See, I just couldn't get over that.
But I knew going into it, it was going to be tacky and bad. I knew that, and so I went into it with the expectation this is going to be tacky and bad, and it was. But I'm entertained.
I suppose if you had different expectations, I could see how it could be fine. I just like I don't know. Like there's bad. Like there's good TV, there's bad TV, and there's good bad TV, and then there's bad TV. And for me, that was just bad TV. Because I just, like, I don't know. It was just, like, who wrote this?
No, that's fair. The writing is, it's bad. It's not good. It is bad. But I don't know. It's also just kind of nostalgic because they have a lot of, you know, what's it called? Easter eggs of, like, High School Musical stuff. And I did really genuinely like High School Musical, the movie.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I guess back to... High School Musical, the nostalgia thing you mentioned reminded me that this weekend I went and saw The Suicide Squad, and it was possibly the worst movie I have ever seen.
Really? I mean, it was bad, but the worst movie you've ever seen? That's a... I've seen some bad movies in my day.
Have you seen it?
I have not, but... It had a big budget, so.
Well, okay, I'll talk about this movie and then the more general concepts it made me think of. But, like, so the story that I've heard behind this is that for the original Suicide Squad movie, there was a director, and the director quit mid-project because they did not feel that their creative vision was being realized. So they made a movie called Suicide Squad, and then there was also a movie made called Birds of Prey, which was like a spin-off movie.
But then
this movie, The Suicide Squad, is like that spin-off movie never happened. So what? Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
The fuck?
I know. But so this movie I think it's like a very contentious there's people on both sides because I could recognize from a like cinematography aspect, like there were some very unique and good like things that were done from like a cinematographic I can't speak today.
The cinematography was good.
There were some unique and creative things that happened there. However, the rest of the movie, and maybe this is an aspect of it, but it had like Tarantino levels of gore and violence, potentially even darker, though I don't know, Tarantino does go pretty far, but it was incredibly violent and gory, which, like, you know, maybe to each their own. For me, it was kind of a lot. And like I consider myself, you know, an appreciator of Tarantino. Like, he was clearly has a very particular artistic vision. But anyway, and like I guess I don't know who's in charge of like writing and directing and plot and all the different things, but like There was some cool cinematography, but then besides that, it had very similar problems to the first movie of just, like, there was very little character development, and, like, they just had so many characters that it's just, like, I am not attached to any of these people because I don't know them, And then, like, the plot was very basic. Yeah, so I think it was just because the levels of gore, like, because it started off right away very gory. So I think that's kind of why it kind of off-put me. And then there was just nothing, like, the cinematography was cool, but, like, there was nothing that, like, wowed me enough to be like, yeah, this is a good movie. It was kind of like, this is a violent, slightly visually interesting movie to watch that has a bad plot and characters. And so, yes, that is my take on The Suicide Squad. You may watch it for yourself and see what you think. But what it made me think of was, like, how, like, I feel like, especially in, like, blockbuster film, there's not really that much original content going on. Like, it's all remakes and reboots and blah, blah, blah. But and, like, especially in the theater we were in, all the other movies showing were, like, very action-y and, like, kind of violent. And so the theory I came up with was that, you know, there's so much streaming and, like, Netflix and Hulu and Prime, like, they have so much content that, like, that's kind of where the more experimental and, like, maybe diverse media is. But then the media that, like, goes to the theaters is, like, the blockbuster, like, things that in my mind appeal more to the, like, straight white male audience that has the capital to go to the theater. So yes, this was Jennifer's segment on media. Thank you for listening.
Movies. I watched them. This has been Lizzie's segment.
Can't believe you're watching media. High School Musical, the musical, the series.
You know what? It entertains me. I am entertained, and that is the point of the show, and it does it well. So I'm entertained.
I suppose. Going back to what you came here to listen for, not my comment on the Suicide Squad, but relationships.
Oh, also, High School Musical, the musical, the series, has a love triangle that could very easily be solved with polyamory.
Yeah, but will they do it? No.
No, but they could. No. But they could.
The only series that I have watched that have had poly representation, like very modern series, are the new Winx Club reboot, which I have mixed feelings about, but they do seem to have a love triangle going on, and Elite, which is a Spanish TV show that has had multiple love triangles in it. Good for them.
What kind of annoys me about of love triangles in TV, though, is that often, you know, the love triangles, so very often I feel like it's a woman and two men, and the woman will be like, this man fulfills these needs, but this man fulfills these other needs. Which one do I choose? And what ends up happening is she chooses which need she gets fulfilled, instead of just being like, look at these two perfectly complementary men that I have who could together fulfill all of my needs. Why do I not do that? Because monogamy. Like... And so then they always make one, like, more attractive or more wealthy or more of something that is clear that she prioritizes in her life. So, like, the choice is obvious, and then she chooses that one, and it's like, yay, I'll choose these needs over my other needs. But then it's just like, okay, so we'll go the rest of your life without having those other needs met. You're just gonna, okay, I guess. Cool.
Yeah. I forget what you originally said that sparked this, but, yesterday aired the season finale of The Bachelorette, and boy was it messy. We're still halfway through the finale because it's like 3 hours, and so we like watch the first part and we'll go back and watch the rest later. But spoilers for any of you who haven't watched it or care. But basically, what happened is, like, so Katie the Bachelorette was in love with this guy named Greg, and like had been from the beginning, and then like. But she kept saying, she was like, I don't want to say I love you until, like, I know, like, who I'm going to marry. Like, I only want to say that to one person. And, I was like, interesting. Very, very monogamous mindset. But so basically, she was down to the final three, and this guy, Greg, was, like, clearly the front runner. And he basically poured out his heart to her and was like, yeah, I love you. And she was like... She did not say I love you back. And so he got really upset. I don't know if it was because she didn't say I love you, because I don't know what he knew about her philosophy, but he did not feel that she handled how he expressed himself well. He did not appreciate her response. I think they both handled the situation very weirdly, but he ended up leaving. And then like a couple of days later, Yeah, so he left. She was devastated, and she was considering quitting the show, but she, like, stayed. And then, like, a couple days later, she goes on a date with one of the other two guys remaining, and he comes to her, and he was like, yeah, I love you. And she was like, I fucking love you, too. And it was like, what? And so our theory is that she did not want to lose another person as she had before, so she was like, yeah, fuck this philosophy, but who knows. But then
that makes sense. She's like, last time I didn't say it back, he left, and I don't want you to leave, so I'll just say it. No, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, but she didn't.
Everything is a trauma response. Everything is a trauma response.
But she didn't fully throw it out, because she was like, because I said it to this one guy, she sent the other guy home. And so it's like, I'm clearly not, you know, Katie Thurston. I don't know what's going on in her mind, but it's like, wow. Like, was it just because this guy's date was first and he said, I love you, that you decided the second guy just send him packing? I don't know, but it was just so funny. And, like, clearly there's editing going on, but it was like, last episode, it was like, oh, I'm not going to say I love you to the end. And this guy leaves because of it, the guy who she was clearly in love with more. And then this other guy says I love you, and she's like, yeah, I fucking love you, don't leave me. So it was messy. But it's funny, because the guy who did say I love you the second time that she said I love you to back, I am convinced is a psychopath, because he just, I don't know, the way I read him, and again, you know, it's TV, it's editing, who knows, but just like, I just don't read him as having any true emotions. It truly does seem like he is just play acting at having human emotions. But I was discussing, and it's like, you know, not all psycho/sociopaths, and I don't know the difference. It's like, I don't feel like all of them have violent tendencies. And, you know, if you have a partner and, like, they're good at play acting of being a good partner, then, like, you know, that's not the worst thing you can end up with. Like, maybe it's not, I don't know, depending on what you're looking for. I don't know, maybe they're super calm and they don't get angry all the time because they have no emotions. I don't know. I don't think it's a relationship I would want to be in, but, like, if they don't murder you and it, you know, works for you, then, you know, sure, maybe psycho and sociopaths deserve love too. I don't know.
If that's where your bar is, hey, he didn't murder me.
I don't know.
Marriage,
I don't know.
Successful, nobody died.
You roll the dice, you move the mice, nobody gets hurt. Thanks for listening.
If you enjoyed this, leave us a review.
Or share it with a friend or your polycule.
And stay in touch on social media at Harmless Harlots.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.